Good evening, good morning, wherever you may be. You're tuned in to Coast AM. I'm your host this evening, Dave Schrader. I've been getting pounded with emails on my Facebook page and my normal email box, people sending me stories as they know I'm a huge fan of the Beatles. The weird case of Is Paul Dead that surfaced back in 1966 and with the death clues through 69, always been a fascination of mine. Well, there's a news story that is cycling throughout the social media sites. Former Beatle Ringo Starr claims the real Paul McCartney died in 1966 and was replaced by a lookalike. That's the article making its way around. Is this fake? Is this fraud? We're going to talk to the one guy I know will have the answer for us. Gary Patterson is back with us this evening, and he's been called the self-styled Fox Mulder of rock and roll. Back in 1996, Patterson published his first book entitled The Walrus Was Paul, The Great Beatle Death Clues of 1969. And of course, the premise of the book dealt with what may be the strangest hoax in the history of pop music. Had Paul McCartney been killed in a car accident and replaced by an imposter? It's weird that this story is resurfacing again now. Why is this such a popular story? Why are people so interested in finding out the answer? We'll be talking with our guest, Gary Patterson, in a few moments about that. Then later on in the show, Bruce Van Natta will join me, and we will talk about his near-death experience, out-of-body experience, and seeing what he believes were two angels that were sent to save his life. We'll talk about miracles, out-of-body, and near-death experiences. That takes place tonight, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Gary Patterson will be my guest for the first segment here this evening, kind of the go-to guy when it comes to rock and roll and rock and roll legends and oddities. Gary, thank you for joining me this evening.
It's good to be with you, Dave.
Well, I told you yesterday I was getting inundated with emails and people sending me this link, this article, very well written by an author called Barbara Johnson. Former Beatle Ringo Starr claims the real Paul McCartney died in 1966 and was in fact replaced by a lookalike. I guess Paul McCartney, that whole story that's been out there cycling and circulating for decades about the possibility that he might have been replaced by a doppelganger. I guess Ringo wants to come clean now as he's 74 years old and nearing the end of his life. According to this article, he wants the story to finally be told. Now, I reached out to you about this after doing my own research, of course, knowing this story is a hoax news story that's being perpetrated and pushed out from a fake news source. However, it's still capturing the attention of the world. People are talking about this article, cycling it around. And let me give some advice to the listeners. When you see an article like this, take the topic, the title of it, and then Google it and see if it pulls up on news sources like MSN, CNN, MSNBC, any kind of real news site. And if it does not, you can probably file it away into your hoax category. But people are still enthralled with the story 50 years later, Gary. Why are people so fascinated with this strange hoax?
Gosh, Dave, you mean it's a hoax?
Well, I don't know. I bought into it when I was a kid, right?
I know. I was just kidding, you know, because after all, the walrus was Paul. So
exactly.
Exactly. I think what it is, it's a form of mythology that goes along with pop culture. If you go back when James Dean was killed in his car accident, the studio actually propagated a myth that he was still alive and he was a sanatorium and he had thousands of mail written to him daily saying, Jimmy, we don't care how disfigured you are, just come back to us. Okay? You have that. You have the one with Morrison, with Père Lachaise. I mean, you can go through the stories. And it's like, almost like being in early English myth where you had the scop, the storyteller, who told the story and people would listen intently and then they would retell the story and retell the story. And let me tell you, the clues are incredible. Now, I've always contended that a lot of the clues are just sort of what people see and what they make fit. Maybe as clumsily as taking a sledgehammer and smashing a round ball into a square peg. But some of them, I mean, there's no doubt in my mind the Beatles actually planted some of the clues. There's no other explanation. It couldn't be coincidence. Now, for whatever reason, the Beatles haven't told us. So let's take a look at the story. Why would some people with a Beatle background think that maybe the story's true? Well, if you ever took a look at the movie Let It Be, you can see the animosity brewing between the three Beatles and Paul McCartney. I mean, Ringo Starr quit after the What album because he couldn't get the drums correct on Back in the USSR, and McCartney would record over them, and he had to come in the studio and pretend he didn't notice. Well, eventually he quit. And if you look at the beginning of the Let It Be movie, you'll see these flowers on Ringo's drums Mal Evans is placing there, because all the Beatles had written him and saying, Ringo, you're the only drummer for us. So he came back. George quit. He came back. And, you know, so you had this animosity. Would that be with an imposter, maybe? Would that happen? And like you said, maybe the idea is that Ringo wants to come clean, or maybe it's a attempt to sell a lot of Beatle records, because when the Paul is Dead rumors came out in 1969, all the old albums jumped back on the charts because everybody was going through them looking for the clues. So that's
which is actually that's yeah. Marketing genius when you think about it, because here you've got basically the storyline broke down that in 1966, while out driving his car after from my understanding, a fight that might have happened at the studio, McCartney mm-hmm. took off, ended up crashing his car and was killed. They quickly replaced him with a gentleman by the name of the name is eluding me right now. William Shears, Billy Shears Campbell, and right. replaced him with this lookalike from Ottawa, Canada, who was part of the Ottawa Police Department. He joined the band, and no one was the wiser. But the band, feeling some guilt over it, decided to place little hints throughout the albums from that point forward, kind of letting you in on the secret that there was something going on. Now, you had this huge blowout with the Beatles and rock and roll and things like that when Lennon made the comment about, the Beatles being bigger than Jesus Christ. Many albums were destroyed and everything. Was this just an interesting marketing ploy to get people to rebuy the albums, relook at these album covers and the stories? Do you think that had anything to do with it?
Well, take a look at it. I think that obviously they made millions. Mm-hmm. Off the idea is Paul is Dead. They may not, if it was a total coincidence when Russ Gibb announced it, and the Beatles were probably upset at first, but then when they saw the sales of the records, they kept it going. And it was a brilliant marketing plan. But let me talk to you about this. This happened in 69 when the rumors came out. So let's take a look a little further. The Beatles' music changed with Revolver. And it was no more, I Want to Hold Your Hand or She Loves You. It was going into different directions, mm-hmm. like Tomorrow Never Knows, which is just coincidentally a title that Ringo came up with. But if you go into Sgt. Pepper, Sgt. Pepper was a complete break. Well, what happens if people don't like Sgt. Pepper's? What if it's too advanced or too different for a lot of Beatle fans and it doesn't sell? Well, it seems like a great idea if you could put some great clues on the cover and then sort of leak it out later that people would buy the album, and that way the Beatles would generate income from it. So that could very well be true, very well be true. And there's other reasons against it. First of all, to me, the strongest reason against the post about Ringo claiming the imposter is in the name you gave, which was William Shears Campbell. The creator of the Abbey Road mythology of the Beatles and the funeral procession was Fred LaBour. And Fred LaBour mentioned the name William Campbell from Canada as a winner of the Paul McCartney lookalike contest. Well, there was a Beatles lookalike contest, but the winner's name was not William Shears Campbell. It was a guy's name was Keith Allison. And Keith had a hit song called 98.6. And he did resemble McCartney a little bit, but you didn't hear anything else about it. So I guess what I'm saying is, for the article to mention the name William Campbell with a name that didn't exist, that just Fred LaBour threw out there, it was someone who had probably read my book and read a lot of things about Paul is Dead, and they came up with the name William Campbell. At the time the accident supposedly happened, the name was given as William Shears from Chelsea in England, and that's why they introduced Billy Shears, that's they introduced the imposter on the Sgt. Pepper's cover. So that was pretty well brilliantly placed in there. And I guess what we'd say is that that one thing sort of brings up the idea it's a hoax to me. The other thing is, since I've done the book, I know a lot of people who are insiders to the Beatles, family members, whatever, so I've got their story. But when you take a look at how it's all put together, you know, what I would have to hear is a tape of Ringo doing this interview live.
Right.
And then, you know, another opportunity for him to do what he does best. So that's tell a story about the Beatles. And there was one rumor that he had slipped one time saying that he was the last surviving Beatle, which gave other people credit too. Now, I have to tell you, Dave, as well as you know and I, when you take a look at the people's involved in the Beatles who are fans, there are people who believe either way. And the ones who believe that Paul actually died and was replaced by an imposter, let me tell you, they're very firm in their beliefs. And the ones who believe that this was all just made up, they're very firm in their beliefs. What I try to do is walk a thin line between both, because the story is so great. I want the legend to live forever. And I want people to grow up into it. I want kids to grow up into the Beatle music and into the Beatle mythologies and urban legends, and let them research it themselves, because I remember what it was like sitting in a dark dorm room with the White Album on, playing Revolution Number 9 backwards, and, you know, the chills that I received. Well, you know, that's part of a great story, a great urban legend, whether it's Bloody Mary or the Vanishing Hitchhiker or whatever it is. This was pop culture's greatest story, and it has to do with the Beatles.
Right. So we do want to say this. I mean, the story is propagated from a fake news service. You have to be careful. Some
right.
refer to themselves as a satirical website. However, there's nothing funny about the article. It's just an article kind of rehashing all of what has been put out there before. Now, just to review for some of the listeners that may not be familiar with this, and to get them started, I read the book Shout when I was, I don't know, maybe 10 or 11 years old, because I love the Beatles. Was reading through it, and that's when I started to first get introduced to the idea that McCartney had died. And I remember buying into it hook, line, and sinker, and going through my Aunt Judy's record collection and looking at every album cover for some kind of weird clue, from the cover of Abbey Road, where it looks like a funeral procession as they're walking across the street to the cemetery, and John Lennon dressed in white like a priest, and Ringo Starr dressed in a suit like a pallbearer, Paul McCartney following close behind barefoot and holding a cigarette in the wrong hand, and George Harrison dressed like a gravedigger in the rear as they're making this across, with the VW Beetle in the background with the license plate 28 if, meaning that if he had survived, he would be 28 years old when this album was released, and the shadow skull on the back of the album, and then looking at Sergeant Pepper in the hand over the top of Paul McCartney, the little white Aston Martin, which was supposedly the car I guess he was driving when he was killed, sitting on the leg of the doll, the Beatles guitar made of flowers. It looks like a cemetery plot that they're standing in front of, with the old Beatles bowing their heads looking at this. So there was all of these great points, and then you open it up, and in the middle of the album, there they all are, and Paul's got on a patch that says OPD, which again matches up with the story of this gentleman, this lookalike, who was part of the Ottawa Police Department, who vanished soon after Paul McCartney supposedly died. And now he's wearing the Ottawa Police Department, or OPD, officially proclaimed dead logo. They're just taunting their audience with it. And then on the back of the album cover, where they've got all the lyrics, each one seeming to be pointing to something that might be another clue. And I believe they're pointing to a line in A Day in the Life, he blew his mind out in a car, and leading people down this weird path. As you see this, I mean, are there any of the actual clues that you've looked at, or any of the things people have brought forward to you in your research, that you thought, now this part does stand out as, this is weirder than it should be?
Well, actually, there is. And it has to do with the Sgt. Pepper's cover. If you look at the bass drum, and the bass drum is set up in the center, and if it was a grave that says Beatles, it's freshly dug dirt, you look at the word Beatles, which is a different font from Lonely Club Band, right? Or the club's band. So the lonely part stands out in a different font. In the crowd, you have Lewis Carroll, and John Lennon loved Lewis Carroll's wordplay. But also Lewis Carroll wrote Alice's Adventures Through the Looking Glass. So that could be a clue. You take a straight-edge mirror, you place it in the center of Lonely Hearts, and it spells out a cryptic message going from left to right. It spells out Roman numeral I, and then O-N-E, one again, and then numeral I-X, which is 9, and then it says He Die. And between He and Die is an arrow that points straight up to Paul McCartney, and down to the grave. And at first, when you look at it, you think maybe one of the Beatles, the one with nine letters, he died. But you got to remember, if it's a tombstone, the tombstone gives you the name of the person who died and also the date of death. So let's take another look at it. The arrow points up to McCartney, and then you have 119. Take the two ones, put them together, forms 11. 11-9. And in the article that just came out, they mentioned the car accident occurring on November 9th. Well, the 11th month is November and the 9th day. When you turn it over on the back, the line you were talking about from She's Leaving Home, George Harrison is pointing with his thumb, and the very first line says Wednesday morning at 5 o'clock. If you go back on your calendars, you'll find that November 9th, 1966 was a Wednesday. And at least three other Beatles sources, they mention an accident McCartney had on November 9th at 5 o'clock in the morning. Now, Sgt. Pepper's was the first album in history to have lyrics printed on the back. And also notice the back of the album cover is blood red. So, whoever designed the bass drum, Joe Epgrave, and you take a look at his name, Epitaph and Grave, whoever designed that had this clue that stood for years. And supposedly Mal Evans is the one who came up with the idea about calling it a Lonely Hearts Club Band. So the album appears to have all these clues to make people think that McCartney was killed. The hand over his head that picks him out of the crowd, or as Live Magazine said, an open hand over his head was a Far Eastern symbol of death. Okay, the yellow hyacinth flowers that spells out Paul question mark from the bass guitar. And if you notice, the bass guitar has four strings. This has three. And even McCartney with his right hand holding out to the bassoon has three fingers over it. And if you look at the back of Sgt. Pepper's, he has three black buttons on the back of his jacket. And if you go all the way up to Abbey Road, you'll see a series of dots before Beatles. If you connect the dots, it says three Beatles. Also notice that on Sgt. Pepper's, it just says Beatles. It doesn't say the Beatles, which implies that there could be some of the Beatles there, and maybe one's not, or two's not, or whatever.
But and this could Beatles. This could be them toying with the crowd and having a little bit of fun with the fan base and kind of playing into this strange mythology. And then we do have this part queued up. Here was one that always caught me. At the end of Strawberry Fields, there's this weird musical interlude, and you hear John Lennon, to what most of us hear, clearly say, "I buried Paul." Later on, I guess he came forward and said, "Oh, no, I said, I think, what do you say, raspberry jam or something like that?"
Which sounds cranberry sauce.
Oh, cranberry sauce, raspberry jam. None of it sounds anything like what he's saying in this little bit. And we've got that queued up. Let's play that little bit real quick so the audience that aren't familiar with this. This is at the end of Strawberry Fields. I don't know if we can cue that up and play it one more time. So you hear this weird message, "I buried Paul." The walrus was Paul, I think, in the song Glass Onion on the White Album. Here's another clue for you all. The walrus was Paul. Right. Mm-hmm. So you've got all these. Now, I will say, and we've only got a minute or so left on this, one of the more intriguing things I have seen, there are some side-by-side comparisons of McCartney, early McCartney, and McCartney in his first solo albums. The shape of his lips are different. His eyebrows are arched differently. And there are some changes that make him look as though it might be somebody else. Have you ever addressed that fact in your books?
Well, actually, I did a show on Coast to Coast with George years ago, and when the idea came out there was some forensic difference, I actually went to a person who graduated from the Body Farm in the University of Tennessee, and of course he studied in forensics, and we went through the whole thing. You got to remember, a lot of pictures are stretched, so sometimes that gives a different perspective to the size of the face. I know that McCartney grew a mustache on Sgt. Pepper's because he had an accident on a moped, and he split his lip, and you can see the scar on the White Album. So that could probably do something with the lip. But, you know, the whole thing is, the thing is so funny, and it's great, and it's still living in urban legend, which it should. And if you also listen to that message again backwards, where it says, "I buried Paul," and then Lennon says, "I said cranberry sauce," you can hear those two. The other one is Derek Taylor, their press officer, was in the studio with them. When they asked him, he said, "No, I heard it clearly." John says, "I'm very bored." Okay.
Again, that's the pareidolia, right? Our minds trying to make sense and people looking for these strange clues. Gary, thank you for stopping in and helping to clear some of the way. And I know you're going to be visiting with George this week. You and Xavier Hayes will be on discussing, actually talking about Elvis Presley, the fame, the riches, the darker side of the entertainment industry, and the burning question, is Elvis still alive? Our Gary Patterson, thank you for stopping by and joining us. You can find him again this Thursday with George Norrie and hear more about the Beatles and Elvis. When we come back, Miracles, Saved by Angels, Bruce Van Atta, my guest here on Coast to Coast AM. Part of my fascination with exploring the strange and supernatural is miracles, angel encounters, strange things that happen that there is no other explanation for than some kind of heavenly interaction. We're going to discuss that this evening with our guest, Bruce Van Atta, a gentleman who survived an unbelievable situation. Should have been dead, by all accounts, should have been dead or at least left severely physically disabled. He has a story that will blow your mind. He's going to spend the next few hours talking with us about this story, about other miracles that he's collected from his book that he has out regarding Saved by Angels. What are your thoughts? Do you believe in angels? Have you seen an angel? Have you had your own miracle occur in your life? We're going to want to hear from you later on in the show. In the last hour, we'll open up phone lines so that you can call in and share your stories, share your examples, or if you have questions for our guest, that'd be the time to chime in with us. Bruce Van Atta will be with me right here. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. You're listening to the best in overnight talk radio, and we'll be back with more Coast to Coast AM right after this. Good evening. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host for the evening, Dave Schrader. Joining me for the remainder of the show, Bruce Van Atta. He was crushed underneath a semi-truck back in 2006 and was on the verge of death when he had an out-of-body experience. During this near-death experience, he saw what he believes were two angels sent to save his life. This evening, Bruce is going to discuss how doctors have never found anyone else who's ever lived through this type of injury has sustained. He'll talk about miracles, stories he's collected for his books, and more. We'll do that starting right now. Bruce, thank you so much for joining me this evening.
Hey, Dave. Good to be on with you.
You know, I like to get started, especially in these kind of stories, going back a little bit, finding out some of your background. Prior to the experiences you had that you would consider miracles and life-changing events, were you an avid churchgoer? Did you believe in miracles? Did you believe in angels?
Well, I'd had a few different encounters in my life that I knew were supernatural that could not be described in any terms logically. That had to be something, you know, of the supernatural type nature for sure.
Well, supernatural, I understand. You know, so many people will liken things to possibly a ghost interaction or hearing a voice or mm-hmm. seeing lights in the sky that they can't. But when it comes to, you know, a miracle type activity or angelic encounters, was that something that was part of your lexicon or was that just flight of fancy and science fiction stuff?
Well, I would say, again, I knew that there was stuff out there, supernatural. I'd had different encounters, paranormal encounters as a child. Right, I'd seen different, black, cloudy things that I knew were felt demonic, you know, scary stuff in my house, things like that, different experiences.
Were you ever afraid that these black clouds, these mist-like things would hurt you, or did they ever?
They never did hurt me, but I was definitely afraid of them as a kid, for sure. I mean, I think a lot of, you know, children and even adolescents and adults, we experience these different paranormal things. And I think that there's good explanations for these things, and it is real, and it's not just in people's heads.
All right. Now, one of the stories, before we get into this massive story and the story that captured the attention of the world and has been featured on many news stories and TV series, you had an encounter, something that did kind of flip that switch for you, and a big transitionary change. Talk to me a little bit about what was going on in your life at that point.
Well, I grew up in a home where there was, you know, I had an alcoholic parent, and so there was verbal abuse and physical abuse. I had some babysitters that I had been repeatedly molested by and stuff, and so I grew up with a lot of chaos and a lot of pain inside. Because of that, I ended up in getting involved with drugs, started out with marijuana or early age, and, you know, it just goes from the next thing and next thing, and pretty soon it's alcohol and, you know, just different addictive type things. And that cycle lasted for 20 years of my life, where basically I stayed high every single day. You know, I think a lot of people encounter this stuff and they
they use drugs and alcohol like medicine, it just to try and, you know, numb the pain that's on the inside. And that's what I did. And, you know, it got to the point I just couldn't, you know, after 20 years, and I don't know how many times I'd been to drug counseling and different things, and nothing worked. And these two missionaries came to our house, and, you know, we gave them some stuff to do their missionary work, and they go to leave, and they said, hey, is there anything we can pray for you for? And I said, yeah, I've been addicted to drugs and alcohol for like 20 years. Pray for that. And it was a husband and wife. They came back into the room, and the wife stood over me. I was sitting on the couch in our living room, and the wife stood over me, and she began to, like, I could say read my mail, but she told me things about my life that no one in the world knew other than, like, my wife. And she started saying, look, when you were like five, or, and these are people they were from a different town. They weren't from our area. They didn't know me, nothing. And she's standing above me, and she just begins to operate in the word of knowledge. And she says, look, about the time you're 5 or 6 years old, you're molested. You didn't feel loved by your mom, your dad. She's telling me everything about my life, things that nobody in the world knew except my wife. I started crying. And she said, you know, this drug addiction you've been fighting isn't a physical problem. That's why drug counseling hasn't worked for you. It's an inside problem. You've had demonic, you know, spiritual oppression against you. And she said, if you want to be done with it, stand up and we'll pray for you right now. And so I yelled for my wife. We stood in a circle. And my wife and I both saw the exact same thing when these two people were praying. We literally saw light and dark figures above our heads. It looked like they were sword fighting, but you couldn't make it out really clear. It was more of like a shadowy type thing, but it was crazy because we both saw the exact same thing, and they were frantically like battling. And the more they prayed, the more they were battling, you know, faster pace they got. And all of a sudden it was just like bright white light, and all the dark figures were gone. And literally from that day forward, after 20 years of daily drug use, from that day forward, I was completely set free. And after failing with drug counseling and all the other stuff I tried so many times, I mean, that for me was supernatural.
So just in the simple act of prayer over you, you felt that that truly released you. You didn't slip. There was no issues with trying to break the habit. It was just a done and done, cold turkey, clean cut.
Yeah, it was cold turkey cleaned up. Now, like 6-7 months later, some things happened in my life, and what I began realizing was there was different things that I can do on my end of it, to like open doors and let that crap, that demonic, that oppression back in. And one of them was like unforgiveness. I had unforgiveness for a certain person in my life, and got in a fight with that person. And, you know, I felt that stuff begin to creep back. And those same people that had come and prayed for me, I called them up and I said, hey, you need to come pray for me again because I feel this stuff coming back on me. And that's when they said, look, you need to start, you know, maturing in your spiritual walk. And if you've got unforgiveness, and I didn't realize at the point, I didn't even realize that it came back when I got in a fight with this person. And this woman again operated in the word of knowledge. And finally, she prayed on the phone and finally she said, you know what? Who'd you get in a fight with such and such day? And I was trying to think, and it's like, oh yeah, that's right. And she said, you know, if you have unforgiveness in your heart for this person, you have to let it go, because that's just an open door to let the enemy back in your life.
I mean, fascinating idea that something could be done like this. We've seen on our show, Darkness Radio, we've done prayer and healing requests on the air and on our social media sites for the last 10 years. And we've had people report back with unbelievable responses. And, you know, is it the intention of so many people, a collective coming together with positive thoughts and vibration and love and light, that is truly saving it? Or is it a heavenly angel or what people refer to as God or Jesus? You know, I think it's funny that a lot of people will, you know, come at it from so many different angles, when it seems to me that it's all kind of the same. Because if love and prayer and good thoughts and intentions, I think that's exactly what God, Jesus, the Bible, any religion is really kind of trying to preach, is it's the coming together in a source of good, to do good things. And when people come together, how they can create or manifest a reality that can be better than what we are in now. And here you had a want and a desire and people willing to help you. And by setting that intention and praying over you, it was able to help break and release maybe an energetic pattern that surrounded you, this dark thing that was attached to you from somebody else's issues and goop that we may encounter on a daily basis. Because I think everybody's gone through that, right, Bruce? Where you meet somebody, you're in a good mood, you meet somebody, and you just walk away after talking to them, and you feel like you've been covered in tar.
Yeah.
Right? And you're like, what? Oh, man, what a crappy day. I hate my hair. I hate my face. You know, what? And then you stand back and you're like, where did this come from? And you realize you've taken on somebody else's gunk.
Yeah, like Ghostbusters, you get slimed, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you got to remember to sometimes clear and shake that stuff off. All right. I want to cover in at the top of the hour here. I definitely want to get involved in this story. That changed your life in a major way and changed the lives of so many people in the story that you're able to share. And we'll get into that. And I know you've written a few books about being saved by angels. There are cases throughout history where, you know, many people have claimed to have seen, you know, the Virgin Mary, the Blessed Mother, angels, Gabriel, Peter, things like that. I want to ask you, before we get too deeply into this, why do you believe that of all the people in the world, Bruce Vanetta was picked out to have a miracle occur in his life?
Well, you know, when doctors tell you the only person in the world has lived with, you know, these certain injuries that I sustained, that is a common question that comes up over and over and over. And I personally feel like God gave me the answer to that question. You know, when I was on your other show, Dave, we talked in kind of in depth about different things in my past, you know, all the drugs and alcohol and illegal activities, just the negative lifestyle I led for so many years. And I, you know, when you do an honest study of what the Bible says, and I, you know, now reading it, rereading it, looking it over, where I'm at, what I found in 1 Corinthians, the Bible says that God chooses weak things, foolish things, despised things, things that are not, so that no one may boast. In other words, I can't tell anybody the reason why, you know, when I prayed out and said, God, help me, and he sent those angels, because I was a good person, because I had the Bible memorized, because I made the right choice or decisions, because all those would be lies, because none of that was true. I think it's simply his mercy, and mercy means not getting the punishment we deserve. Blessings mean getting grace. His grace means getting the blessings we don't deserve. And I think really the reason why I was saved is if God would, when I call out in my desperation, Lord, help me, if he would come and do everything that happened to save me, I think then it's just like setting the bar so low that it's like proving that he'd do it for anybody.
Do you believe that we as people have the innate ability to push and have miracles happen? You know, there are claims that we can do, you know, even Jesus says, you can do what I can do,
right?
In the Bible. You know, I don't know. A lot of people use these terms and they throw out Bible verses and, you know, something when you go back and you read it, well, yeah, I can take any sentence out of context,
right?
make it mean what I want it to mean for my story.
Absolutely.
But when you see this, do you believe that we as humans, just without any divine intervention, do you believe that we are capable of creating miracles every day?
You know what? It depends on what your word for, you know, what your meaning of miracle is. I think that if God has given us, you know, people, we have the ability to be good. We have the ability to be evil. We've got the ability to affect people's lives for negative, for better, for worse. As far as like supernatural type, you know, miracle of if on that end of it, I don't think that a human being, my personal opinion, I don't think that a human being has the ability to do something miraculous as far as, you know, like a miraculous healing or something that that defies logic, defies natural, defies science. I don't think that a human being can do that. I think that can only happen through the supernatural.
I always find it fascinating whenever we do shows on Coast to Coast or on my show Darkness Radio, and we talk about things like UFO encounters, right, and alien situations where aliens will come forward and talk. It is never to somebody that is looked at with major influence, right? It's not like the aliens landed on the front lawn and went in and had a talk with President Clinton or with Barack Obama. It was always some guy out in the middle of Sandusky, Ohio.
Yeah.
Right. Or somebody out in Tennessee. And it's never somebody that has a broad audience that, you know, might be taken more seriously. And you look at it, and I mean, in a sense, it has to be humbling that Bruce Vanetta was picked to have this kind of situation happen in his life. But why not? if it's important to spread the news of miracles and spread the news that there is a greater force outside of our own consciousness, outside of our own being, why hasn't this happened to, you know, why didn't Franklin Roosevelt suddenly stand up from his chair and be able to proclaim that? Because he had the ear of the world.
Yeah.
And I know that they were hiding his disease and not many people realized what he was going through. But I mean, it would just seem that if a major change was to be made, why not give it? And I know this is where the skeptics come from. Why not give it to a person who's in a place of prominence that could make an impact and show the world, look, miracles are real. This is what happens.
You know, that's a good question, Dave. I don't have the answer to that question. I do know this, as I literally travel around the world and speak 25 to 30,000 people in person a year, and you know, all the people, millions via, you know, television and radio and all that, and we go out and, you know, I share the story, whether it be here in North America or in other countries. We do, as we talked about before on the other show, we see miracles and we see things happen. And so I know it's something that's happening. You know, miracles are happening around the world all the time. And if people have their eyes and ears, spiritual eyes and ears attuned, you know, tuned in just like the radio station, if they're willing to, you know, be open-minded and just look at the facts and look at the way things are and what's going on, they're out there. I mean, they are definitely continually happening. It's happened throughout history. I study, you know, things that have happened in the last however many hundred years, even in church, and just kind of, you know, figure out where this healing stuff and all this has been coming from and where it's going. And I mean, it's amazing the stories that you read, the things that have happened, just, you know, even documented, well-documented stuff.
Well, I think, too, what's funny, you know, a lot, and let's be honest, a lot of people's perceived notions is what they get from reading books, watching TV, seeing movies, right?
Sure.
People that want miracles in their life, sometimes I think, are overlooking the obvious. They overlook things that, you know, they want the bolt of lightning, right? They want to, you know, oh my, you know, help me out. I need the money to pay. And all of a sudden money just starts falling from the sky. And that's the miracle, you know, unto itself. But I think sometimes people forget to look for other miracles. I had a fascinating little talk with my son about, oh gosh, I would say maybe 20, 25 years ago. Well, I guess about 20 years ago when he was about 7 or 8 years old, we were driving from Minnesota to Chicago to visit. And we began talking about things like miracles. And my son wanted to know, well, I want to see a miracle, Dad. How do we see a miracle? And I said, well, why don't we ask for a miracle? And he said, okay, I want to see a miracle. And I said, how about you want to see a miracle within the next 10 miles? Let's see if there's something that'll happen that would be a miracle. And again, not knowing what to expect, and I didn't want to set my son up for failure. I, you know, wanted to see. But I'll tell you what was one of the most weird and fascinating moments. We weren't looking to the sky for the bolt of lightning. We weren't looking for some massive thing to occur. But as we're driving and as we reach that 10-mile mark, I pulled the car off to the side of the road. And I said, well, there you go. There's your miracle. And he said, Dad, what are you talking about? And I said, there's a miracle right in front of our car. And he's looking around and just totally oblivious to what I'm talking about. And we got out of the car and walked out. And I said, I want you to look. What do you see right here? And he said, well, I see a flower. I said, not just a flower. This is a sunflower. He said, right? And I said, look at the sun. There's no seeds anywhere around here. There's one crack, one seam in the side of this road. That crack had one seed fall into it and grew. Look at all the skid marks. Look at all the things around here. This thing grew to 6, almost 7 feet tall. Nobody's hit the sunflower, and it was exactly at the 10-mile mark of where I asked to see it. And I said, miracles are what you make of it. It's what you're looking for. Stop looking to the heavens or for, you know, blood to turn to water or wine to turn to, you know, water to turn to wine. Sometimes it's just as simple as something that shouldn't be there that is. And ever since that point, I've been a lot more cognizant myself of looking for the miracles, the little things in life that just remind you that there is something better and at play around us that we sometimes take for granted.
Absolutely. There's a lot of little things that happen every day if we have, again, our spiritual eyes and ears attuned to it and be open-minded.
Definitely. We've got our guest for the next 3 hours of the show. We'll open up the phone lines in the last hour. If you've ever had an experience with miracles or angel encounters, we want to hear from you. If you have questions for our guest, we'll open up the phone lines at that point as well for you to interact and be a part of the show. This evening, if you want, you can go to coasttocoastam.com. That's coasttocoastam.com. You'll see links to our guest, to his books, his ministries, and the other information there about our guest, Bruce Van Natta. And you'll also find some of the news that we've got up there, the breaking news, also the story that I referred to earlier in the show, talking about Ringo Starr allegedly coming forward to claim that Paul McCartney did in fact die in 1966. All that information is up on the site. And if you've missed any part of tonight's show or my guest hosting last night and you want to know how you can find these shows, really simple. While you're there, go and become an insider. Very easy, 15 cents a day. You become a Coast Insider. It gives you access to over 5 years of our past archives, gives you access to live chats with the hosts of Coast to Coast and George Norrie, gives you access to live chats with many amazing guests from around the world, news sources, and more. And it's all collected for you for 15 cents a day right on the site. Go check it out for yourself, coasttocoastam.com. When we come back, the remarkable tale of a man crushed by a truck, a man that should, by all rights, be dead. We'll find out Bruce Van Atta's story, his near-death experience, out-of-body experience, and being saved by angels. That's next on Coast to Coast AM.